Welcome to You Only Know Half, a weekly podcast about Jamaicans in America. This episode of You Only Know Half is brought to you by the law offices of Dahlia Walker, practicing immigration law throughout the United States, the Jamaica Tourist Board, Jamaica, Heartbeat of the Caribbean, and Victoria Mutual, building financial independence. I'm your host today, Dahlia Walker Huntington, and this week's episode features Mrs. Norma Darby, the undisputed maven of Jamaican culture in Florida. Mrs. Darby is responsible for bringing us the sounds of old-time Jamaica in the diaspora. A cultural archivist, she ensures that elements of our culture is preserved and shared in our adopted homes. Mrs. Darby, welcome to You Only Know Half.
I thank you so much, and it is a great pleasure to be here with you, Dahlia.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you taking time from your still busy schedule to spend some time with the listeners. So, Mrs. Darby, tell us, where exactly in Jamaica are you from?
Kingston, boring Kingston.
Under the clock, as we used to say.
Well, actually, I wasn't actually under the clock, but born where most everybody else in my era was born, Kingston Public Hospital.
There you go. There you go. So tell me about life in Jamaica as you were growing up as a child. Where did you live? Who did you live with?
Oh, my dear. I don't know if you have enough time. My life in Jamaica was awesome. My mother was a school teacher and a disciplinarian. Okay. I was her only child, and I was not going to be spoiled. You know the thing about only children being spoiled? So she bent over backwards, you know, spare the rod and spoil the child. Right? And even though my dad tried his best to spoil me, it was not happening. As an only child, you would think that I would be lonely or whatever, but we always had a house full of other children. People would send their children from the country to stay with the teacher. I had a permanent sister who was my god sister. I can't remember not seeing her around. She was 4 years older than I was. And in the old tradition, you know, they dress you to look alike. So every, you got clothes at Christmas and you got clothes at the birthday. Those were the new clothes, new shoes, everything. And we were always look alike. And, you know, when you're going out, like on a Christmas morning and you're driving down to the Victoria Market at the pier, Victoria Pier.
Yes.
You would hear people say, Lord, what a way them sweet, two little sisters, one for the mother and one for the father. By this time, my god sister was a darker hue like my mother. So, you know how old-time Jamaicans were?
Yes. And you had to have the look, the resemblance, as we used to call it.
Resemblance, yes. It was very interesting. And when I look back at it, at the time, I didn't really make an impact on me. But looking back, and I'm glad that you urged me to look back, I can think of all the things that I used to do as a child. I was not alone, not being children around me, but I kept pretty much to myself. I was my own best company. And I was a voracious reader. I read everything that I could lay my hands on, even the dictionary. My mother had a book called Jack's. I think it must have been an encyclopedia. And I read it from cover to cover. And my best part of the book was famous quotes at the back of the book. And I would just read them off at my schoolmates, you know.
Oh, lovely. So that was my next question. Where did you go to school in Kingston? Where did you go to?
With Morrisnip Preparatory School. And have you ever heard of Mary Lenora Morrisnip? She was immortalized.
Well, I've heard of the school for sure.
She was immortalized by Miss Lou as Mary Married Nib because they she and another lady called Miss Bourne, they decided to have a mass wedding and marry off all the people that were living in sin. You know?
You know, I've heard the story, but I didn't know it was true.
It was true. The biggest wedding, and they provided wedding dress and veil and took Marsham downtown to be married. And you want to hear something? Within, I would say, 4 months of the marriage, mash up.
Oh, my goodness.
Because this, what was happening is that the women now felt, hey, I have the ring on my finger. I can do as I don't have to do this and I don't have to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
And the men got fed up.
So, well, that's my goodness.
But it was quite a farce.
No, well, the name of the podcast is You Only Know Half. I have heard people being referred to as Miss Bourne, but I did not know that it was an actual occurrence in Jamaica.
Oh, yes. And she was a champion for the animals, too.
Wow, that is interesting, very interesting. So after Morris Nib Prep, where did you go on to school?
I moved on. I have to tell you this story because Mary Married Nibs was an integral part of my life. She laid the foundation and she was a disciplinarian, and she had a mandate that pass and picnic can't tell lie. Okay. And that was that was a downfall because they would tell the biggest lies. I remember telling one of the reverend's sons that he was an insidious jackanapes. You know, I mean, it's a love big word, right? And the boy went to Mrs. Nib and didn't even tell her. Of course, he couldn't remember what I said, but. Mm-hmm. He told her, I said some bad words. No, my right said some bad words. And Mrs. Nib never questioned. She said, meet me down the hall. She had a boarders as well. And so the hall led to the boarding part of where the boarders lived.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a good scouring of my mouth with soap and water.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Literally. Oh, my goodness.
Every morning, they inspect your fingernails and make sure that they were clean and cut. So it was almost like a finishing school, you know?
Uh-huh.
Because when they took charge of you, they took charge of you, body and soul.
Yes, yes.
And they had a pound table where if you left your books around, anything that was left behind was put on the pound table. And at worship the next morning, you had to pay a farthing to get the money out of the pound. So that's to be careful of
your items back. So really, it was, it sounds like one of these schools you see on a movie about English boarding school.
Precisely.
Yes.
And I mean, we had to learn. We didn't, first of all, Louise Bennett Coverley, or at the time, Louise Bennett, was not mentioned in school. You can't bring up that name at all. Because they say, I don't know what is wrong with that girl, Louise Bennett. Here we are teaching the children to speak properly, and she's pulling them backwards.
Yes, yes.
So that was the concept in those days.
So,
you know, you went the usual thing. You took your scholarship examination. I was a Paris scholarship winner, so I figured I could go to any school, my choice being St. Hilda's, that's a school. I found myself at Arden High School. Disappointing, but again, serendipitous, because I would not have had that freedom. And another side to life. Mm-hmm. This school was a church school, a Church of God school. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of morning devotions. But the things that impressed me most of all was that I was exposed to a different type of music. I met the great late Lloyd Hall, who was our music teacher.
Okay.
And he took us on musical trips all over the world. We could sing anything. Mm-hmm. And he started a program at RJR. You remember RJR?
Yes.
But the schools, a school, a singing. And of course, I love to sing. And so I got into that, and we went off to the RJR every Monday morning until my mother found out about it, that I was spending time. And so I was promptly removed and sent to Woolmer's.
No, seriously?
Seriously.
Oh, my goodness. So when you went on to Woolmer's now, what was life like at Woolmer's?
Totally different. I had a whole different, my classmates were different, I would say, because of their financial status. For instance, I went to school with the Loas girls, for example. Barbara was my head girl. And I met a lot of lovely people, but my main thrust was that I was exposed to another mighty music teacher, Daphne Vidal-Smith, who took me on another journey. And I was able to more express myself musically. I started playing for the morning devotions. I played by ear most of the time. And because my parents could not afford to pay for music lessons, my god sister, whose father was the Minister of Education, hired a music teacher to come to the house to teach her. Was very upset with me most times, because when she finished playing, I would go on the piano and play the piece by ear. Auntie, tell Norma to stop playing my pieces. So one day the music teacher came and heard me, and she said, you know, this little girl has talent. I am going to teach her for free. And that is how I started to learn to play properly.
Yes. And that is so interesting. Interesting.
And was
so after high school in Jamaica, what did you do?
After high school, I was programmed as a child, coming from a family of teachers and physicians and musicians. I mean, there wasn't any other choice. I was going to be a doctor. I was knee high to a cricket, I would, and what do you want to be, little girl? A doctor? And everybody thought it was too cute. My family doctor used to call me Dr. Norma.
Oh my gosh.
And so I had it in my mind that I'm, well, needless to say, you can't put us a square peg into a round hole, right? Something had to give. And to the disappointment of my parents, my older cousin, who had bequeathed me all her medical books and that sort of thing, and having wasted time, I wound up in the lab. And it wasn't bad, but it was okay. I progressed, because, you know, you always want to succeed. And I got into cardiology. We took the lab exams, and I got my degree in medical technology.
Okay. So you worked in that field in Jamaica? Yeah.
Yes, okay. I was fortunate to be chosen to open the first cardiovascular lab at University Hospital. And I actually went away to America, my first voyage, to learn cardiovascular techniques at the Misericordia Hospital of Fordham University. So when I came back, but this is a whole nother story. While I was there, my dear sweet husband, who was missing me, he says, decided that he was going to go to university in New York, since I was in New York, right?
Okay.
And
how long was that sojourn that you had to go for?
I was there for 2 years.
Oh, okay. Yes. Well, I can agree, definitely. That's a long time.
Yes. And so he applied to and got into Cornell University. It's New York, right? But of course, we in Jamaica don't know, so New York is very, very big. and he was 4 hours away from where I was.
Oh my gosh.
So he went off to Cornell and I went back home. At mm-hmm. that time I had two little ones who were staying yes. with my mom, and I resigned from the work, packed them up, and off to Ithaca we went. I arrived in a snowstorm.
Oh,
and the little one scooped up a handful of snow before I could even catch him and said, snow cone into his mouth. And that was a whole nother epiphany because here I was in this really, really far backward part of New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I made friends.
Not the glamour and the lights.
Not at all, not at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was so cold, I didn't know what to do with myself. And anywhere you went, uphill or downhill, the breeze was blowing in your face, the cold breeze, And so I got a job, two jobs, because mm-hmm. husband is cool, right?
Yes.
And it was very interesting. I made friends with a very close friend who was of Austrian-American.
Mm-hmm.
She had never been close to a black person, a person of color before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny when she looked at me and she accidentally saw the middle of my hand, you know, hand middle.
Yes.
She said, the middle of your hand is white. I said, yes, I'm a foot bottom too. No, I don't know what they probably thought, but the pigment was the same on both sides. So can you imagine? Yes. That level of ignorance.
Yes, really. So she herself had an epiphany.
Exactly. No wonder they had all those race riots and things like that, because nobody understood or took the time to understand the other person. You know?
Yes, yes. So you said you had two jobs while your husband was in school. What were those jobs that you had?
Well, one, my main job was at Cornell University, where mm-hmm. I became a lab supervisor for the experimental lab in the Department of Physics. I was now working with grad students who mm-hmm. were making telecommunication conductors for the U.S. Army, for the U.S. Air Force in Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And me in charge of the lab, Miss Delia. I don't know A from Bullfoot about these things. And when I was interviewed, the professor, who was Eastman from the Eastman Kodak family,
mm-hmm.
he said, I noticed that you only had a lower degree in physics. I said, yes, but I did chemistry. And at the time, I don't think the elements have added anything. There are still the same amount of elements. So I talked my way into the job and relied heavily on the lab assistant who knew everything.
I got you. And what was the second job?
The second job was working as a cashier at one of those restaurants. On a weekend. So that was the weekend job, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Gotcha.
And when Daddy was home to watch the kids.
Oh, I see.
And I had wonderful children, because nowadays, how can you leave two children at home, ages mm-hmm. 5 and 3, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I sent them off to daycare, and daycare kept them until 5 p.m. But if you had to work overtime, mm-hmm. they were on their own.
Oh, wow.
And I told my daughter, I said, darling, look, you have to take care of baby brother. Okay, so she did it. I mean, she took our job seriously. She would call me 3 or 4 times a day. Mommy, baby brother is not eating his dinner.
Oh, my gosh.
Darling, and coax him. And I locked the front door and the back door like you told me. I said, that's a good girl, darling.
Oh, my gosh. These days, that would be definitely not considered at all.
But most of the students who lived there, who were mm-hmm. there, we all lived on a campus. And many of them, and we lived in the married quarters, and we sort of watch out for each other's children too, you know.
Got you.
And I was surrounded by a bunch of Jamaicans who had come to the Ag School, which the New York Agricultural School was based up in Ithaca. So many of them were there.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, Miss Darby, you said something before that migrating to America gave you cultural freedom. Can you explain that for the listeners?
Okay. When I came to America, well, it's a little story, a little gap there, because my husband worked at was the opening team for Disney World. So after we left, we went to Orlando. So, you know, I've come full circle, because here I'm back again.
Yes. And here we are 50 years, almost to the date of the opening of Disney World.
That's correct. And so, when I tell you, we were Disneyed out, because I went to Disney every day, because we only had one car, right?
Oh, my gosh.
And we tested out the rides. Thankfully, nobody got hurt when they were putting them in. But it was quite an experience.
Yes, and I'm sure.
We went back to Jamaica, where he worked for Holiday Inn. And that's a whole nother story. And then he came to America, back to America, when he was offered a job at his alma mater, which is Florida International University.
Okay.
So we pack up ourselves and back to Miami we went, where it started. I'm going to tell you a little story, a little throwback, that I wasn't happy, because it didn't have pleasant memories for me, you know, from the old days, right?
Yes.
So we came back and we found a nice house, even though the realtor tried to show us several others in a different area. I'm still blocking it in my mind that this place is you know, prejudiced. Just say it out loud. And the man was trying to get us to live in the black neighborhood, and we weren't having any of it.
So right.
I was looking for the best school, which was in the white area.
Right.
So we found the house. The neighbors didn't talk to us, which was okay. I had no time for that. And the school was right across the street, which was great. The kids just had to walk across. They were like,
exactly,
because my daughter was very responsible. You know, took good care to get in the house, lock the door, call me when she get home, and follow instructions. I worked at for a private doctor in Coral Gables. And he was an OBGYN. And when he retired, he sent me to work with a cardiologist. So I was back on home ground, so to speak.
Yes.
And that was when we joined the Jamaican Association of Florida. And and had our first venture to the
what period we're talking about here? What time period?
It was back in the late 1970s.
Okay, 70s.
Yes, and so I went off with them to the International Folk Festival, and they had a nice booth selling patties and curry goat and rice and, you know, soft drinks, the usual stuff.
Yes.
When I looked around me, all the other countries, they had a culture, they had a performance tent where they were performing folk songs and doing folk. The Greeks were wonderful. I was totally enthralled with them. And I said, wait a minute, why are we just sitting down here selling food? We can do something else too. And so at the next meeting, I broached the subject and collected a lot of folk songs from the people who, a lot of them from the who came from the country, bringing real grassroots folk songs. And I wrote my friend Jamaica, and she sent me a book compiled by the same Lloyd Hall.
Okay.
And Jamaican songs. And I was off and running. And I said, next year we are going to be on that cultural stage. What are we going to wear? I had another friend who used to work for the JCDC and had access to bandana material.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the little ends that they were discarding.
Okay.
Well, my dear, I joined them together and made our first costumes and learned how to sew. You know, there is nothing like necessity. That's, you know, the mother of invention. That's not an idle talk.
Yes.
I learned how to sew, learned how to make peasant blouses and embroidered them a few pieces. And so by the next year, we were costumed. Pitchy patchy, oh, but it was all right. And we got up on stage, and I remember the first song we sang was a song that we learned from Mr. By this time, you know, when the 33 and a third record came for me, I sat on the floor and I played it and played it and played it until I could learn every word and write them down.
Yes.
And one of the songs that I learned was Bangalang. Miss Lou used to sing it at the end of whatever. A bangalanga langa 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 lang, a bangalanga langa 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 lang. And say Jamaica at the end. And that is how we ended our performances.
Oh, lovely.
Mrs. Crowder follow us round and round. Come back to the stall with like the Pied Piper of Hamelin. We brought them all back to the stall, sell off all our food and go back and perform again.
Oh, wow.
And then the next year, I took it upon myself to enter the cultural display that they had in the library. This is down at downtown Bayside Auditorium in Miami.
Yes.
And I took everything Jamaican out of my house. Never gave a thought to people stealing them.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, I lost nothing. And we won the first prize.
Wow. Wow.
$70. $70, which in those days was big money.
Big money.
And of course, it caught the attention of the whatever. And by the following year, we had become the face of the festival. Our pictures were on the brochures.
Mm-hmm.
We were on the float parade. That was the pre-launch of the festival.
Yes.
And we were invited to all the major TV stations to talk about the festival in Jamaica.
Oh, lovely.
As Mr. Koya Papa. Then Channel 2, WPBT, you know, the public television.
Public television, yes.
They invited us to come and do a performance. And so I hook up with my friend Gloria Lanneman and Noel Heron, and we wrote a musical called Heritage. And with the whole story of Jamaica, from the Africans coming over, we learned some African songs, you know, and it was choreographed by the late and great Shirley Campbell. And of course, it's script by Gloria Lanneman. And honey, it was a marvel. I mean, I don't know how we did it, but we did it. I made all the costumes, learned to tie-dye.
Oh my gosh. So you've added all of this to your repertoire.
Yes, thanks to the course. And that was.
And so you went on. Is that when the Jamaica Folk Review was actually formed, or did that come later, or this came out
little,
of this?
It came a little later from the, we used to call ourselves the singers, the Jamaica Association Singers, right?
Okay.
And then we decided to form a group that became the singing group. And later on, I came up with the name of the stush name of Jamaican Folk Review.
And so, how many singers did you have?
At the time, we had about 15. And they used to drive to my house on a Sunday after church and rehearse. And I would cook dinner for them and feed them. And this went on until I think my husband was getting a little bit upset.
his Sunday's work now, no longer his day of rest.
Not at all. And so we found a little accommodation at a friend who I call her my musical sister because we have the same ideas. And she offered her home and her church hall for us to rehearse.
Okay.
Later on.
How did you provide the music? Did you have musicians or was it recorded music? How did that go?
We first sang a cappella and then we borrowed a guitar, had a wonderful guitarist. And then I sold it to one of my church choir members. Mm-hmm. He was a wonderful young man, blonde and blue-eyed, but the most devoted member of the Folk Review.
Ah.
When we did the Heritage, he played the part of General Jackson. And, you should see him, so pompous, looking up at while the slaves sang around him, saying, "Oh, General Jackson, oh, General Jackson, oh, General Jackson, what a moment you bring upon St. Thomas people." And so you have to watch that Heritage. I'll send you a copy.
Yes, I was just about to ask you. I hope that this is preserved. I know this was a while ago, but this is history that we need to definitely preserve.
And
so the Jamaica Folk Review went on to kind of be a unifying force in the community. Tell us about that. Yes, how did that expand?
It was. As I said before, it started off with the members of the Jamaican Association.
Mm-hmm.
And then gradually, when they realized it was not all fun, but it entailed a little work, some of them fell by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
But gradually, people who saw us perform called and asked if they could join. I remember one girl calling me and saying, "I can't sing much, but I can dance." I said, "Okay, come."
Oh my goodness. And, but then you started performing all around South Florida.
What, Mrs., we were in demand.
Yes.
We were the face, the actual, what do you call it now, picture of Jamaica that the tourist board used to depict Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
Every drum knock, we were there. We were with the tourist board. I have a picture of myself, which I never saw. It was in the Gleaner. And I went to the library to perform. And there were these pictures in the library lobby. I said, "But this is a picture of me." I said, "The lady," I said, "Who is this?" She said, "Oh, these are some island for performers." And the blame teller is me, because by this time I don't look like me anymore, you know? But I did manage to get a copy, and dancing with a basket on my head.
Oh.
For the tourist board.
Oh, my goodness.
I learned to write music. I learned to arrange music. I learned to choreograph. I learned, let me tell you, Miss Dahlia, I took this thing like I was sitting up for a bachelor's degree in folklore.
Mm-hmm.
I took it very seriously. Every trip I made to Jamaica, I spent it at the library downtown.
Yes.
I have Olive Senior books. I have Miss Lou books. I have Res Nettleford books. I have, you name it, I bought it.
Yeah.
And studied it like I was sitting on an exam. Because you have to be informed. Because somebody's going to throw you a curveball and ask you a question that you can't answer.
Yes. But you also use that knowledge to influence your performances, no?
Oh, absolutely. The poor people had to sit through a lecture in Jamaica before we actually performed. And you know, the amazing thing, Dahlia, is that the American people, not our people, were the ones who were most intrigued. So we had invitations to perform every week in Coral Gables, Coconut Grove, all the moneyed areas of Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And
because this was an aspect of the culture that they didn't know about. You talked about the food, which people know about Jamaican food. We are renowned for it. And also the reggae music, the popular music.
The historical,
the heritage.
Yes.
Was something new for as you not just for Americans, but I think for Jamaicans as well. Because as you rightly said, you prefaced your performances with a mini lecture that was delivered in an interesting fashion, and it intrigued everybody to participate. So at some point, Miss Darby, you not only did the folk review, but then you started on a passion for educating the diaspora about Miss Lou. Tell us when that happened.
Interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
When Miss Lou transitioned, I wouldn't say dead because she's still alive. Okay, mm-hmm. She's not here in person.
Yes.
It suddenly hit me that we had lost an icon because Miss Lou was always taken for granted.
Yes.
She's just there.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a community concert to celebrate her life on her birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said, make us take up a collection. I mean, I know why, but we passed a basket.
Mm-hmm.
We collected $2,500. Yeah, do you understand?
Yes.
And it was going to go to the Edna Manley College mm-hmm. as a scholarship to preserve Miss Lou and what mm-hmm. she brought to us. And so that is how it began.
Okay.
The following year, we actually did three community concerts. But the following year, I was talking to one of my close friends. And I said to her, I said, you know, I want to do a little bit more. I would love to be able to educate people. We are giving a scholarship to educate Jamaicans, but now we have to educate our American people and our Jamaican people who have forgotten our culture. Especially now that Miss Lou is gone, we have to preserve it. We owe it to her. Mm-hmm. And so she said to me, Auntie Norma, she called me Auntie Norma, said, Auntie Norma, at the time, the university was doing something for Miss Lou to celebrate her that same year.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know what? Let us do a concert. Establish a concert in her name. She said, I know just the person who can help you out. And she marched me over to the library.
Okay.
Where I met my alter ego, my hand-in-love person, Valerie Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, yes, I'm sure we can let you use the library, but let me take it up with the higher-ups.
Mm-hmm.
And long story short, we were given permission to use the library auditorium.
Okay.
And the first reading festival came on board.
Yes, that's the Miss Lou.
Louise
Bennett Reading Festival.
Reading Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Big name, you know. I said, Lord of mercy. I hope it turned out right. But we had a winning hand because I invited Joan Andrea Hutchinson and Malachi Smith. You know Malachi, right?
Who? Yes, yes.
Who was my good buddy. It's my big son, that. I adopted him from years before when I first saw him perform. He was such a darling. Malachi said, Mother D, why not ask Mervyn Morris? Because, you know, he wrote that book. He edited Miss Lou's book.
Mm-hmm.
I did, and to my great surprise, he came.
Oh,
what
a
reading festival it was. We had a panel with Joan Andrea Hutchinson, Professor Mervyn Morris, our own little Dr. Sue, who at that time was just cutting her eye teeth on her poetry. She had just published her first book of poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And Father Easton Lee, who was one of my advisors.
Mm-hmm. What did you hope to accomplish by having this reading festival in Florida?
To educate and while entertaining. I coined the word edutainment, mm-hmm. educating through entertainment, to bring in our people mm-hmm. and let them see what the real culture is. I know yeah. reggae and Bob Marley and now dancehall, but mm-hmm. what about the ground, the grassroots culture, where we came from, the culture of our ancestors?
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
what they needed to know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
so that is what we did. And we are now in our 14th year. And mm-hmm. each year we invited another culture keeper, I call them.
Mm-hmm.
We had Barbara Gludon.
Yes.
From doing pantomime, Marjorie yes. Wiley, the music.
Mm-hmm.
Rex Nettleford was supposed to come, but unfortunately he died that year. So we got Dr. Lantronette Steins,
mm-hmm.
the Tadko, who came and did the dance with us.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Mina Blackwood Meeks, bless her heart, she's been with us so many times.
Okay.
Carolyn Cooper. Well, anybody who was smart in the cultural scene, we invited. We were very bright, you know. And they never turned us down. Never. That's amazing awesome. Thing. They never turned us down.
The festival is also very well received in the diaspora.
Very well received. At first, it was the majority of the attendees were professors.
Mm-hmm.
American, white Americans who wanted to learn about the culture. But gradually, mm-hmm. as we included children's programs and, of course, a free concert,
mm-hmm.
other people came. And now it is fully established. And I hope that it's something that people look forward to.
Yeah.
Gradually.
Yeah, before we end, I want to ask you about some some terms, Jamaican things that people may not know a little about, and to ask you to just give a few second explanation. Can you tell us about poco? What is poco in our culture? What is that?
Okay, you have this. Poco is part of the word. It's pocomania. It started mm-hmm. off as pocumina, which is a it's a religious rite,
mm-hmm.
and African-based, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are vestiges of it that you can find in Haiti as well.
Okay. And, so a way of worshiping then.
A way of worshiping.
Yes, and, yes.
Unfortunately, people felt it was denigrated because it was only practiced by the people, the have-nots, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. So it's a way of worship that's a form of what? It's singing, it's dancing,
singing,
or is it
dancing, and mm-hmm. sometimes getting into a little bit of a trance, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you, it's amazing. I remember stealing out one night and going to a poco meeting in St. Thomas.
Yes.
And crawled through the people fence. And I was a little bit frightened at first when I saw them with the, you know, whirling around with a machete.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a part of cutting the evil spirits and sprinkling the white rum to appease them, you know?
Got you.
When you don't know something, you know, you really...
Yes, it is. And it takes on this myth. So it's good to dispel the myth and to say it's part of who we are. It's part of our culture.
Absolutely.
The other word that I want to ask you about is gumbe. What is that?
Gumbe is a rite,
mm-hmm.
a religious rite, African religious rite.
That okay.
In enlists the playing of the gumbe drum, you mm-hmm. know. I never got into it. I was not privileged to attend anything, mm-hmm. but I had to learn about it so that I could tell people. Mm-hmm. And I actually bought a gumbe drum. I don't know why, but I have it.
Is it something that's secretive?
Most of the African-based religious rites were a little bit on the secretive side. You had mm-hmm. to really join to be accepted.
Okay.
You know?
Why do you think that was? Is that the way it was in Africa? Is it to preserve it? Is it because it's misunderstood?
I think it is more to because of misunderstanding and to preserve it. Because if you remember during the days of slavery, that was sort of whipped out of us. Nobody wanted to hear about it. So we had to go underground to preserve our country. You know?
Got you. Yeah. Got you. What about Dinky Minnie? What is that?
Dinky Minnie is a practice, a dance, West African, of course. And I know somebody's going to correct me, but so I'm not going to pinpoint where, but it was practiced mainly in Portland.
Okay. In Jamaica.
In Jamaica. And Brookings.
Okay.
You know, and the Brookings was something else. The Brookings, they did to celebrate emancipation.
Okay.
Where they would dress up like a queen and a king and go out and dance.
Okay, got you. So, so much of who we are today. You talked about reggae and dance hall has sort of, it's spawned all of these various dance movements and so forth, but it's really the people expressing themselves, but we come from a place or a people who have expressed themselves in all of the things that we've just talked about here in 2 minutes, the Poco,
yes,
the Gumbe, Dinky Minnie, Brookings.
Absolutely. And if you examine African dance, you will see it's replicated in Jamaica.
Yeah.
It's nothing new, you know, it's just a refurbishing. You
know? Absolutely. So, you know, you've talked about how you saw this opening there, this need for developing the cultural aspect of Jamaican life in the diaspora, and you kind of ran with it in so many different ways and for so long. What would you say to somebody who is, say, a first generation Jamaican or a Jamaican American who really wants to get involved in the culture? What advice would you give them? What should they do if they really want to take on anything you've talked about or some other aspect of the culture?
I would say run with it. Because if I had listened to people who told me that I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that, we would not be speaking today.
Yeah.
You know? When I get passionate about things, I go in 250%. Luckily, I have an understanding husband who supports me in everything that I do. He thinks I'm a little bit crazy, but he is not far behind. And
because he's going on these journeys with you.
And taking me on journeys with him, too. He has dragged me all over half of the world, Miss Talia.
Yes, yes, yes.
He gets an idea and he's running. He hauled me to China, where if you hear people singing "This Long Time Gal" and "Chichi Bud," you will know that's where I've been. I taught at universities. Incidentally, I have to tell you this very quickly. I taught at a university in China. And in the class, there was a young boy who I asked the children to introduce themselves. And this boy stood up and said, "I come from the same place you come from."
Wow.
I said, "What are you talking about?" He says, "Jamaica." I said, "You have to be kidding me." Here the boy kissed my neck back.
And he was Chinese.
And that is when I realized that our Chinese Jamaicans send their children back to immerse themselves in the culture. I wish that we could have done that, sending up our children back to Africa.
True, to learn the culture. This is so true. A lot of Chinese, because I have two brothers. Well, one has passed on, and their father came from China, and they themselves weren't sent back, but other siblings were sent back to China. And yeah. I didn't realize that that was still happening.
Oh, yes. We also met mayor of one of the communities. Mm-hmm. My husband, who always jumps off and asks questions later, got into trouble with the Chinese government because he fired somebody. And you don't fire people in China.
Oh.
You know, the security guard was sleeping on the job. And my husband got them to write a sign in Chinese that whenever you wake up, you are fired. Where the man woke up, looked at the sign, and went back to sleep. And he slept the whole day.
Oh, my gosh.
Until he had to go home, at which point he was fired. So
the nerve.
So they went to the Chinese have their government where mm-hmm. you cannot be fired.
Mm.
So he went off to his people and he complained. And so the mayor came to see Mr. Darby. Everybody said, Mr. Darby, you better start packing now because you're going to get fired. The mayor came up and hugged Mr. Darby and said, Pong Yao, ni hao ma. Guess what? He was a Jamaican sent to China to learn about his country, and the Iron Curtain dropped.
Oh, my gosh.
The bomb, the curtain, whatever the curtain them had, it fell, and he couldn't leave.
Oh, my.
And so he remained. Can you believe that?
Oh my gosh, that is, boy, I'm telling you, we truly are everywhere.
Jamaicans everywhere.
That is so interesting. Well, Ms. Darby, I could continue. I could talk to you for hours on end. I love the stories. Can you give me a little bit of Chichi Bud before we finish?
Chichi Bud, you going to sing with me?
No, sir. I would never do that to the listeners. I just want to hear you.
Bodo, Chichi Bodo. Some of them are hala, some are ba, Chichi Bodo. Some of them are hala, some are ba, some are jankro. Some of them are hala, some are ba, some are doctor bod. Some of them are hala, some are ba, pichiri. Some of them are hala, some are ba, Chiba Bodo. Some of them are hala, some are ball. Of course, you know that the birds that they were describing, people that they saw. You know that. The jungle.
That is so fabulous. Oh my gosh. You have to promise me that you will come back and we will get in depth into the meaning of a lot of the folklore that we just sing and talk about and take for granted. This has been a fabulous interview, Mrs. Darby. Thank you so much that very inspirational talk. Me.
And can I sing a walk good song for you?
Yes, please.
Walk good on your way and good dopey walk with you. Walk good on your way and good dopey walk with you. Walk good on your way, all the way. Walk good follow you. If you just walk good, walk good. If you just walk good, walk good, Miss Delia, from Miss Lou to you.
Thank you so much, Miss Darby. That was a fabulous, fabulous interview. I really I'm so happy that we were able to do this, and I hope it's an inspiration to others to celebrate the unique culture of Jamaica as we are celebrating Heritage Month, Heritage Week, National Heroes Day coming up. Thank you. You Only Know Half today was brought to you by the law offices of Delia Walker, practicing immigration law across the United States. Check out their website at www.walkerhuntington.com, by the Jamaica Tourist Board, Jamaica, heartbeat of the Caribbean. Feel the rhythm of Jamaica. Visit them at www.visitjamaica.com. By Victoria Mutual, building financial independence, www.vmbs.com. Thank you for spending time with us today. I encourage you to follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at You Only Know Half to get reminders of our weekly episodes. Please show support for the sponsors who make the program possible.
and visit our website at www.youonlyknowhalf.com to listen to past episodes and subscribe to future episodes. We're also available on Amazon, Spotify, Audible, Podbean, and Google Podcasts. Call a friend and tell a friend about the podcast, because you only know half. Walk good, my friends, and thank you.